Okay, settle down, settle down. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, and people from Kerry. All right, Desi. Only joking. Brothers and sisters, you're very welcome along to this, the first of many, we hope, Fellowship of the Spirit, Ireland. As I said, you're very, very welcome. And we're going to kick off, we're going to go round the room. Just want you to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and where you're from. We'll start with you. So, without further ado, I'm going to hand you over to our first speaker for tonight. I want to introduce, put your hands together, Mr. Peter Marinelli, all the way from New York.
Need a drink before I speak. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous, and very grateful for a sacred gift called sobriety. And if you knew me when I was drinking, you'd be grateful too. First things first, thank Danny and Paul for putting this together. And if we can give it up for a moment for Danny, Paul, and the rest of the folks. Grateful to be here at my buddy Myers, and hopefully we'll have some fun over this weekend and perhaps challenge some of the current belief systems that many of you guys may be walking around with from contemporary Alcoholics Anonymous. We will certainly challenge put the plug in a jug and don't drink and go to meetings. We will certainly challenge leave the steps alone because you don't need them. We're going to do a lot of that stuff to kind of shake it up, to wake it up a little bit and share our experience and hope and talk a whole lot about sponsorship through this weekend. I have found out from experience, if you looking at a sick prospect, let's go knock on the sponsor's door because he or she's partly responsible for that. And it's one of our areas in this journey that has gotten watered down and gobbled, and that's why a lot of us in Alcoholics Anonymous are getting drunk and dying, and those of us who walk with a big book under our arm really feel like we're up against it in most of our AA meetings. I spoke to many of you guys, get lots of emails. And you're no different than what we experience back home. Perhaps we have more pockets of enthusiasm back home. But I can promise you, with the big book on the Aram and your intent is pure to carry this message to another sick and suffering, your Heavenly Father will provide the network you need to pass this message on. And those who want it will knock on your door, and those who don't, bless them. And we just keep moving. I'm from Union, New Jersey. My home group is called the Vision for You group, and we're a little over 3 years old, and that group started with the resentment in a coffee pot. I moved to Union, New Jersey, and after about 2 weeks of being in that town, no one wanted to pick on me to share from a meeting, and they were saying, do not ask him to speak. So I got a couple of buds together, and what we did was we got a meeting going, and we created the fellowship we were seeking. And little by slowly, people started to come in, and we number about 30 or 40 every Thursday night, and people are showing up with their big books, and the sponsor has a prospect who has a prospect who has a prospect. It's pretty neat what's going on there right now. So I'm really excited about being a part of my home group. But when we started, it was, you know, how are we going to do this? Because my group was referred to as those people, that book, and that guy. Stay away from them. They're big book thumpers. They're extremists. Be careful what you do around them. They're going to get you into the steps. You may even get better, so stay away from them. All right? And so our very first meeting, we had about 12 people show up, and that has evolved, and I'm really grateful about that. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I say recovered because I am. And anything less than that would just be falsely humble. A loving God in His infinite mercy took me in 1988 from the back of a hallway in downtown Manhattan in New York, a dirty, filthy hallway, one of the most sordid spots of Manhattan, where I was now living at the hands of alcoholism. And in this moment of clarity, I made a plea to this loving God to take me from this. Take me from this place where I am right now. Because it was the very first time in my life I realized I didn't want to die. And my Heavenly Father took me from that hallway, placed me in my seventh and God willing last treatment center, and I have not looked back. And during the first 6 months of being on this path called Alcoholics Anonymous, what I did was I got in very much involved in fellowship. And most of our AA is top-heavy in fellowship, with very little going on with the other two sides of the triangle. And so I fell a victim to that and was making lots of meetings. But after almost 6 months of making meetings, even with a great desire to stop drinking, with lots at stake, a lot was on the table for me that I was going to lose again if I got loaded. Almost 6 months to the day, I almost got loaded again. Because I was depending upon Alcoholics Anonymous meetings to keep me sober. I was depending upon just a fellowship to keep me sober. And after doing that for almost 6 months to the day, I still wanted a drink. And I was living in Minnesota at the time, and I was driving down this main avenue, and I'm thinking, the first bar that I see, I'm going in, I'm going to get fired up. The first group of guys I see dealing some substances on the corner, I'm going to go buy some of that, because I cannot take the pain of living sober like this. This is just as bad as when I was getting fired up, or at least fired up, I was medicating. And I made a plea, God, I'm in trouble, please help me. And I knocked on some gentleman's door, he became my first appointed teacher, and I gave him my dramas of life. I says, I'm sober almost 6 months to the day, I'm living all over page 52, she doesn't love me anymore, I can't get a job, I have no money, I don't know if I want to go home, but I do want to go home. It was drama. You know when you talk to a newcomer and as soon as they call you up on the phone, you say hello and it's the last thing you say, and then they just keep talking, right? And it just goes on and on and on, the drama. And I was loaded with drama. And this gentleman looked at me and he says, Peter, where are you with God in the 12 steps? And I says, Joe, when do I start? He says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. And that disturbed me. He disturbed me on the question of alcoholism, because what I wanted from him was some kind of, you know, touchy-feely kind of answer. Let's hug. Let's do the serenity prayer together. Let's read acceptance out of page 449. Some really nice little slogans. And then I go out and get drunk again. And I began to do some step work with this gentleman. Then I was brought home back to Brooklyn, New York, and another appointed teacher was put in my path. And things started to change quickly as I started to move through the steps. A book says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but when God shows up, God shows up, and it's profound and it's powerful, it's transforming. And for me, as I was moving through this work, I noticed that my perception started to get different about everything. And as I started to have this spiritual experience, I was now hearing with God's ears and seeing with God's eyes and speaking God's words, because I was becoming filled with the Spirit of God, which is simply love. And when we're in that place, how could we be angry with anyone else? How could I not see anything but less than what God wants to see? And I knew things were changing for me. And the proof of the pudding for me was I hadn't thought about a drink in a very long time. And I will tell you, it's a little over 19 years that I've been separated from alcohol. And a big chunk of that, I do not think about drinking. You hear what I just said? I do not think about drinking. I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. It has been removed. It's no longer a problem as long as I continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Now, I can promise you, if you share what I just shared with you at most of our contemporary AA meetings, they'll say, there's the exit door, don't come back. With me? I don't understand why when we walk into an AA meeting with a big book under our arm that we're looked upon as those people. I'm a Catholic. What if I walked into my church and the priest said to me, why are you bringing that book in here for? Are you a troublemaker? But we get a lot of that in our AA meetings, and bless them. When I was going in and out of treatment centers, I would more than bristle with antagonism about people who showed up with a big book. I would more than bristle with antagonism about people who talked about God to me. And I found out on this path that the tension I was experiencing not was anger or tension or resentment with God with me, like I thought, but the tension, anger, and resentment was within me towards God. Because I was coming at God with a lot of old belief systems, a lot of contempt, pride, and investigation. And that's how I would look at AA, that's how I would look at the big book, that's how I would look at God, that's how I would look at this whole deal. And I remember laying up in treatment after my fifth treatment center. I'm in there five times. They picked me up out of the streets and placed me in this treatment center, and AA speakers would come in, and I hated everything they talked about their 12 steps, about their nice little God, and about their little home group and the people they're sponsoring. You don't know what it's like for me. Until I had it completely bottomed out and I became a little bit teachable. And God opened up the door once again. One of the things you'll notice this weekend, or how to notice your ego showing up, it will come in the form of resistance about some of the information that may be presented this week, like I experience over and over and over again in Alcoholics Anonymous. Ego shows up and it manifests in resistance, and it goes like this. Well, I never did a fourth step, so I don't have to do one, so I don't have to listen to these guys. I did a different type of fourth step. They don't know what they're talking about. She looks pretty. I think I'll go to the back and get another cup of coffee. I'll catch the afternoon session. I'll see you tomorrow, you know, something like that. It'll manifest in this type of way to get you out of here. And I ask you to just recognize that through the weekend. It's ego showing up, and ego will show up. It has to, because it needs to breathe. And when you get presented with information from the big book, it knows it's about to die a little bit, and it doesn't want to do that, and it's going to fight for its life. And how does it do that? It takes you or me away from a solution. So just be aware of that through the weekend. I knew nothing about this stuff back in 1988 when I got separated from alcohol. I knew nothing about this stuff the first time I picked up a drink when I was about 14 years old. And I drank the very first time, really, to experience some ease and comfort that I was not experiencing. I didn't realize how much dis-ease and discomfort I was experiencing until I experienced ease and comfort by drinking cold 45 beer. And I remember it was the summertime. My friends were drinking beer on a corner. The church was having a bazaar or a feast kind of deal, and my friends were drinking beer, and I remember being driven by 100 forms of fear. I was restless, irritable, and discontented, and I would see these guys drink and feel joyous, happy, and free, and I wanted what they had to offer. And so I put my hand in, and I took some of the beer, and it went down and hit my gut. Nothing happened to me. And I drank a little bit more, and I drank a little bit more, and I drank a little bit more, and suddenly something happened to me that was really indescribably wonderful. I felt ease and comfort. I felt like I was putting the pieces of the puzzle back together. I was back to being myself again. My friends were the greatest guys. I love hanging out on the corner with my friends. As I got drunk, the girls became very pretty. It's really interesting. As I was getting loaded, these women started to look a lot like Bo Derek. And when I would come to in the morning, they would look like Bo Diddley, and I would wonder how I got into that jam. God had a sense of humor with me from the very beginning. Remember the first time I got loaded, I went home, and I got up the next morning, and there were no consequences of my drinking. I remember what I had done, where I had been, no fights, no police looking for me, so this was a good deal. And I found a solution to what ailed me. I found a solution to my bedevilments. It was called Cold 45 beer. And I went on this chase for the next 15 or 16 years or so. As I continued to drink on weekends, it started to roll into drinking during the week. And little by slowly, I started to experience consequences because of my drinking. And they would be things like missing curfew. They would be things like getting into fights. They would be things like taking money that didn't belong to me. And my family started to think a lunacy commission should have been appointed for me. I started to steal from people who loved me, and the first one I stole from was my dad. And I stole some checkbooks, and I forged his name, and I would go down to the local store and cash these checks, and he got these things back in something called checking statements, and saw his forged name, and he came looking for me, and he caught me in Lower Manhattan, and I went off to my first treatment center. And I had not conceded to my innermost self I was a real alcoholic. My first handful of treatment centers, I went away just because the heat was on again. Dad was after me, they were after me. Got to get out of here, so okay, I'll go to treatment. Had not conceded to my innermost self. And here's what happened to me. Around the fifth, maybe sixth treatment center, I had been way beyond conceding to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic. I knew what I was, and yet I still couldn't stop drinking. And this was the lack of power I was to experience, the real lack of power that we're talking about in step one, no power, choice, and control. I had conceded. I had gone into a treatment center and said at one point, okay, I really want to stop. I don't want to do this anymore. It's ripping my family apart. I'm totally unemployable. I can't have a relationship. I can't even get up and bathe without drinking first. I know I'm in serious trouble. I know I'm a real alcoholic. And even with all of that, with the circumstances in front of me, the consequences in front of me of what I was about to lose, I still went back to that which was going to kill me. And that's the lack of power, choice, and control we're talking about here. Lack of power is my dilemma, with power, no dilemma. And I was experiencing that. And I get loaded again. And I get bounced out onto the street because my family doesn't want me home and I'm homeless. I'm living in the streets and I'm panhandling and doing a lot of earthly things for the price of a drink. And my mind would not tell me now, this is not good. My mind would not tell me, you're going to get into trouble. My mind would not tell me, you're going to hurt people by doing this. My mind would just say, we need to drink, go to any lengths to get it. It would pretty up a junkyard to get me back. Why would my thinking mind, where the main problem for me lies, main problem for alcoholics is in the mind, not the body. See, a lot of our contemporary AA are treating the body, just don't drink and go to meetings, meaning you're well. Delusional, bad information. The main problem for me is in the mind, not the body. Why would my thinking mind for once give me sufficient reason to stop and stay stopped? Sufficient reason will be there, but my thinking mind will say, won't be that bad this time. We'll try it a little different. I have a mind that'll take me back to that which is killing me. And that also goes for some of us who have been sitting around in Alcoholics Anonymous, sober, separated from alcohol, and making AA meetings. Because we still have a mind, if I'm not in the sunlight of the Spirit, if I'm not working with the disciplines in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I still have an alcoholic mind. And that mind will take me back to that which is killing me. It may not be booze up front. But what it will be are sprees, because what my alcoholism will do, what our alcoholism will do, is go underground and resurface in other areas. This is why sponsorship is so key, because he or she can see the prospect going off a cliff before they can. They can help them, encourage them to be working with disciplines in 10-11. Who are you sponsoring? How many meetings you're making? What are you doing with this book? What's prayer meditative life look like? Where are you with amends? Sponsorship, vital. And yet it gets watered down. Quick story. I remember getting out of my fifth treatment center after 9 weeks of being separated from alcohol. And my dad got me this little apartment in Brooklyn. Tiny little place. And he furnished the place for me. And I remember him standing at the door when he was about to drive away. I was 9 weeks in treatment. I was loaded. 2 days late, I was drunk. But he stood at the door and couldn't figure out what that look in his eyes was. It was terror. Not with me, but what owned me was called alcoholism. And he was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it took 2 days. And I was off and running again. And sold everything out of that place and brought like the Bowery into this apartment. And alcoholism was not done with me yet. And so I sober up, and I was talking about sprees that we get in Alcoholics Anonymous. We sober up when we're part of this deal. Alcoholism don't care, because it will go underground and resurface in other areas, and the sprees look like this. Sex sprees, food sprees, money sprees, anger sprees, fear sprees, all of it. Drama. Give me drama. I need drama. I need drama because, God forbid, I should deal with me. I need drama because, God forbid, I should start writing inventory and see what's going on within me, what's going on with the internal dialogue, the disease and discomfort within me. No, just create some drama so I feel useful. I don't have any drama. You have any drama? Danny, I'll get involved in your drama. You don't have, go to Paul. Paul's got to have drama, right? Let's get involved in Paul's drama. If not, you know what? Let's invent drama. We'll do something. Just give me drama because, God forbid, I should hold the mirror up to me and start doing inventory on me. Drama just keeps me away from looking at truth. And you'll hear it. You go to AA meetings, and Joe's always got something going on. Mary's always working with somebody who's giving her a hard time, and her mother's driving her crazy, and her husband's driving, and the kid, it just goes on and on and on. And when that person gets a sponsor that says, stop the drama, you know what that person feels like happening to them? They feel like they're dying. Because they are. Because they are. A big chunk of manifestation of self is about to die, and we feel like we're dying. Manifestation Many of us come to these workshops. Many of us come to a sponsor. All of us come to AA for one reason. And when I heard it put this way, I thought it was a bit extreme. But it's truth. We come here to AA, we come to a sponsor, we come to a big book workshop, we get to a place of surrendering to the 12 steps in a big book for this reason: we want to die. We want to experience the death of self before the physical death. And my book talks about this. Must be entirely rid of self. Daily dying, successful living. We need to experience the death of self. And the more self that dies, the more I'm filled up with the Spirit of God. The more self that's lying around, the less Spirit of God I will experience. That's why we show up to these things. And it goes like this: I can't take it anymore. I'm doing this, I'm behaving this way, she's on my back, I can't take it anymore, I need to do something. That's how it shows up. And so we surrender to this work with the sponsor, and little by slowly we move through it, and we watch different manifestations dissolve, we watch fear dissolve, we watch resentment and contempt dissolve, and suddenly we find ourselves in a place of peace, ease, and comfort unlike ever before. Our book uses the words free man at last. At last. See, we may have thought we were free up until a certain point, until we walk through this work, and then we finally get free. And if you're experiencing freedom tonight and over this weekend, how about getting freer? How about getting to a different consciousness with God, a new level of consciousness with God, and get freer than what you think you currently are? This is the great work we do in Alcoholics Anonymous by 12 simple proposals. It's way beyond the big book that we're going to get to experience. It's way beyond our home group and our AA meetings that we're going to get to experience. It's way beyond our 12 steps. They're all taking us to one thing, the great fact, which is God and nothing less than that. And if anyone's telling you that AA is not about getting to have a relationship with God, I will be the first one online to challenge them. Because that's what this whole deal is about. Alcoholics Anonymous is about 12 proposals to take us to have an experience with God when we can be free of alcoholism for good and all. See, the contemporary deal is like this: quit drinking a day at a time. Put the plug in a jug a day at a time. Well, I will challenge that. God put me here in 24-hour clips. I live a day at a time. That's my human condition. I can't get away from that. But God doesn't wear a watch, not my God. Free is free. And when we could get to walk around with being present to the moment with breath, that's a lot different than counting days now. That's a lot different than being attached to a clock or a calendar. Where I've been brought to on most days is presence, breath, no duality. Duality goes like this: this is fellowship, so I can behave like a drunk without a drink in me. Going to that AA dance, carry on. This is program. I walk into a meeting, we talk about God, so I'm going to be really spiritual today. They ask me to talk on the 11 steps, so I'll be real serious. I'll be like the guru. And on the way home, I'll cut everyone off on a highway, holler at the wife because she burned in and kicked the dog, and until I show up to my next AA meeting, I'll be spiritual again. Right. Oh, I see an AA across the street. Let me act spiritual. And a lot of us get caught up in the service of just making coffee and breaking it down and setting up a meeting, which is a wonderful thing we do. But the basic service we do is one drunk and working with another. So we get caught up in this duality. We get caught up in, well, I'm going to work now, so I have to, you know, fight and for myself, and I got to climb that corporate ladder and do whatever I have to do to get there. And then we get there and we realize we have outer riches and inner poverty, and it's empty, and we're still searching for more, need more, I need more, I need more, I'm not filled, give me more, right? I'm with the wife now, or the husband, I'll behave this way. I'm with the children, behave this way. I behave this way. We have all this duality going on. And we're never in a place of peace, ease, and comfort. How could we be? We're being torn in 80 different directions. And then we get to experience through this work a place called oneness with God or enlightenment. It's no more any duality in our life. Our fellowship becomes service. Service becomes working with others with the 12 steps. The big book becomes fellowship. We're part of the circle. Oneness here, now, and present. And when I take the kids to soccer practice, or I'm doing laundry in my home, or I show up for work, or I'm giving a talk, it's all part of the same thing, because I walk with this power. And when I get to realize, when I get real clear on who's walking with me, I no longer experience fear. Because my Heavenly Father has no proximity with us and Him. He's closer than our own breath. And am I getting that? Am I clear on that? I couldn't get clear on that until I was able to move through this work. Not once, but many times, and get clearer with a deeper experience with this power called God. This is what we ought to be talking about in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and not the nonsense drama that takes up a half hour out of a precious hour meeting. We ought to be talking about what God can do for us and the great resurrections we experience in here, how we get reborn in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was living in the back of a filthy hallway. I hadn't bathed for weeks. I was unemployable and dying of untreated alcoholism. I don't give that lip service. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into the sacred place called AA. And I'm here tonight with a little bit of dignity and God keeping me sober for 19 years. For me, that's a huge miracle. When people invite me into their homes in my family and the women don't have to hide their pocketbooks, this is a great miracle for me. This is a great event. I have challenges in my relationships, but I'm not having troubles in my personal relationships. I'm not causing harm. This is a great miracle for me. Because 19 years ago, you would say, oh, here he's coming, make out, we're closed, the conference didn't happen, lock the doors. Because I'd be looking for loose pocketbooks or money and what I can do. That's the resurrection we ought to be shouting about in Alcoholics Anonymous, what God can do for us, and nothing less than that great fact. And I heard Maya's brother say it a million times, how do you guys know Chris? Why do we just roll over and let the contemporary stuff happen? Those of us with big books, why do we just roll over and let it happen? Because we don't want to take the heat, that's why. Well, tough, take the heat. We all do. And never, ever let me character assassinate the middle of the road is ever. Ever. Because then I become a warring theologian. Let me bless them. And perhaps plant some seeds, and when they're ready, they'll come to us. The last thing we want to be are bleeding deacons with a big book under our arm. I have a way of living. If you want it, I'll take you. If not, so be it. Let's challenge. Let's challenge what's going on out there. But never character assassinate. Let me never character assassinate those folks who aren't doing this. One of the greatest things I've been able to experience, and there have been many in Alcoholics Anonymous, was sponsorship. And I've been blessed with two wonderful men, along with many other teachers. But two wonderful men who were my teachers, who moved me through this work. And great events began to happen in my life. I've sought out religious people in the religious community. I've sought out therapists, professionals. I've sought out lots of different people to help me enhance this experience. But my greatest teachers have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous. My greatest spiritual teachers have been us. Great teachers have shown me a way out because they knew exactly where I was. Whether I was sober one day or sober 19 years, they know. And they knew a way out. And it was not put the plug in a jug. It was not don't drink and go to the meetings. It was not don't worry about the steps. It was where are you with God? Maybe we need to revisit the work again. What's prayer life look like? What's your meditative life look like? Where are you with amends? Same thing I ask people when they come to me. Sponsorship. What a good deal. A good deal. And just to close, my family who was shattered because of alcoholism, there was nothing left. There was resentment and hate and fear running all our lives. My book says that years of living with alcohol make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. My family was ill because of what owned me, now them, called alcoholism. That family who was shattered because of alcoholism has now been put back together with the hands of God because of what my spirit has been able to bring there. And I think it's incredibly selfish, self-centered, and very arrogant when we hear speakers at AA meetings say, all I have to do today is not drink and I'm a winner. Let's go knock on the doors of the people we harmed on the way into Alcoholics Anonymous and ask them that question. I'm sure they're grateful we're not drinking, but what about the selfish and inconsiderate habits? What about how we were tornadoes rolling to the lives of others, and we show up here in a sacred place, we get this wonderful gift called sobriety, and we leave the wreckage there for them to clean up? You see the arrogance in that statement? And see how we view God with His lack of power by not thinking God can allow me to go back there and clean all that up? He has done for me and countless others. I don't care what was going on. I am, we are a physical extension of that which is non-physical and is called God, part of me, and he goes with me. And he'll give me the power to go back and reclaim my life, go back and fix the damage I've done in the past. Will walk me through a fourth step and allow me to visit the most sordid spots in my life in writing a fourth step. Will allow me to sit down with a sponsor or a few and discuss my fourth step and what an order I can't go through with it, and God will allow me to do that and go back and make amends and live in 10, 11, and 12, and then we'll get the knock on a door when a prospect says, can you help me? And the circle is now complete. And we want to settle for just don't drink and go to meetings. That's all I got. Thanks.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a 15-minute break, get some refreshments, go smoke, and we'll back with Myers.